Welcome, Wisconsin. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. We're joined this half hour by Civic Media's news director, Terry Bell. We had a really busy week of news, and as someone who has never been responsible for actual reporting, I wanted to ask you questions. Terry joins us once a month, usually the first Friday of the month, for a segment that I like to call Media on the Media, because we are Civic Media. But Terry is an actual expert. I just comment on things. I just give my opinion.
Oh, Maggie, don't sell yourself short.
But we had a lot of news this week, and I wanted to talk to you about, you've spent your career as a reporter, as a newsman, and I think one of the constant running themes, and we talk about it a lot here at Civic Media, is how do you cover Donald Trump? Because so much of what he says at best is exaggeration and hyperbole or sort of a coloring. And then there's just a whole huge set of what he says that's just an out-and-out lie. How have you as a news director, as a newsman, approached that?
Well, very carefully, to be honest, and you're absolutely right. It is, I mean, there's nothing particularly new about politicians lying necessarily. But there has never been a politician before Donald Trump, at least not at the presidential level, at least not on this scope, where a lot of the misstatements and falsehoods that he says are very easily disproven. I think that's it's not some sort of nuance or a different way of taking an approach to a fact or an opinion. You know, you can fact check a lot of what he says, and it turns out not to be so. So what we're talking about is, well, you know, the former president was in Waukesha on Wednesday. And we covered that, Civic Media, as a network. And there was a lot of planning involved ahead of time, because on the one hand, Donald Trump is the presumptive nominee for president. His public utterances matter. The ones that are true and the ones that are not true. You have to document and then share that information with the public. That's part of our responsibility. What we have been trying to be very careful about at Civic Media is, you know, who do we turn a live microphone over to for an extended period of time, and who bears the responsibility for that? We decided, as good stewards of our airwaves, to not cover these appearances in their entirety, beginning to end, live, but instead acknowledge the news event, acknowledge what he's saying, be prepared for what he might say, and then be able to counter it. But kind of analysis after the fact. So a lot of like what we did on your program on Wednesday, little if any of the actual speech was carried live for a very long period of time. Help me out. I was on the road at the time, I have to say. So I didn't get to listen as attentively as I would have liked to.
It was in my discretion. I just chose not to carry his speech live because I actually think sometimes it's very hard to check what he's, to fact check in real time, because what he's saying is often hard to track, right? He changes topics.
He speaks extemporaneously. You don't know what he's going to talk about.
They usually, candidates will send prepared remarks, so you get them ahead of time. That's not Trump. And frankly, sometimes I have trouble following. Wait a minute. What did you say? What are you referring to? What is that? And I just think, while all politicians in the best or most forgiving light certainly engage in rhetoric and exaggeration or the use of hyperbole for effect, this guy does it with such frequency And often the lies are so big. I think that's sometimes what's new, like the volume of it in a single speech, the speed at which these things are coming, the frequency with which he repeats it. I mean, it, by my recollection, and you tell me what yours is, that frequently candidates would say something, PolitiFact would check them or other news media would check them. And then the next time they were iterating around that same rhetorical point, they would change it a little bit so that it wasn't so easy to say this person's not telling you the truth. Trump sees him, seems completely impervious to the fact check.
Yes, because I think a lot of people that he's speaking to are getting their news, you know, in information silos and are told not to trust anything else they hear but what they're hearing on these particular outlets. And so I think whenever he does this, I think it's, you know, it's confirmation bias. It's, you know, telling people what they want to hear. And, you know, it's been largely effective. You know, he won the race in, you know, 8 years ago, came down to making it very close in states like Wisconsin 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you know, if it's working for him, he'll keep doing it.
Yeah, so I have a question for you that relates back to Trump's appearance here on Wednesday. So my colleague and yours, Stuart J. Waddles, who handles news for Southeastern Wisconsin, joined me on the air. And so I wanted to ask you as a news person, I know one of the things that I try to do and is if I get something wrong or I present it in an incorrect way or even the frame is wrong, I will come back the next day and say, hey, I didn't get that quite right, or there's more context, more information. In my opinion, Stuart said something that was just factually wrong when I was talking to him. And so my question, and I'll share what that is, but my real question is whether or not it was wrong. What do you do as a news person if and when you get a fact wrong? So the example here was that Mr. Waddles shared that Biden has an electric vehicle mandate. That is not true. And in fact, it was part of the PolitiFact fact check on Trump. And it says in the PolitiFact fact check, the Biden administration has set a goal, not a mandate, to have electric vehicles comprise half of all new vehicle sales by 2030. It's currently at about 8%. They finalized a new rule that projects 30 to 56% of light, and they go, light duty vehicles will be battery electric. That goes on. There's no federal requirement that any particular percentage of an automaker fleet needs to be electric, said Jeremy Michalacek from the Carnegie Mellon Vehicle Electrification Group. So what do you do? So my opinion, Stuart got it wrong, said it on the air. Not great. What do you do as a news person when you get something wrong? When do you decide, okay, this actually merits a correction? How does that work?
Okay. Well, unfortunately, I wasn't able to listen to the broadcast because I was, like I say, away and then covering another event happening at the same time. Wednesday was quite a day, by the way.
Oh, my gosh.
We can get into that.
Oh, my gosh.
Man, it was one fire up after the other. I'm not in a position to second guess Stuart. He's a fantastic journalist, and he does great work for
us. Agreed, and I don't mean specifically.
I'm trusting that if he said that at the time, that he sincerely believed it to be the truth.
Yep.
And so
know afterwards, what do you do to fix it?
Oh, well, absolutely. You get on the air and you acknowledge the mistake. And usually, you know, I tend to, you know, my means of getting the word out is typically in a short burst of information at the top, the bottom of each hour. You would typically, you know, one, address it and correct yourself right away, the very next chance you get, or maybe even the next day, correcting yourself at about the same time you aired the erroneous information the day before. So that you're, you know, probably hitting a lot of the same people.
You may have.
Yeah.
I think that's great. One of the things that I've noticed about print journalism is often when they're printing corrections, it's on, you know, like the inside fold, if you will. It's buried somewhere and you got to go look for it. And I have ultimate respect. We all get things wrong because we're trying to do the best that we can. And Wednesday was an enormously huge news day. Some of it things that we knew were coming, some of it breaking news, which brings me to the next question that I wanted to ask you as an experienced newsman. That is, so on Wednesday, by the best of my recollection, and help me get it correct if I get it wrong, we had Trump speaking in Waukesha. We had an active shooter in Mount Horeb. Correct. We had the third congressional district debates that evening. Mm-hmm. And we had the state police had cleared out the encampment on the University of Wisconsin-Madison campus.
That's right. And
we had another protest that was sort of getting underway at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. So we had four huge news things happening at the same time. My head was exploding. I know your head was exploding. Stuart's head was exploding. Everybody was trying to get our arms around this and get people the information that they need. When you have breaking news like this, how do you prioritize where to send people, what order to even cover it in? That was a first for me to have so much happening at once.
Yeah, it was crazy. Days like this are a rarity, especially maybe in places like Wisconsin, bigger markets. I don't know how many. I used to work in La Crosse, and there was a journalist at a competing outlet who worked in La Crosse, but he was originally from Los Angeles, I believe. And I recall running into him out and about at the end of that day, and I made a remark about some news day, huh? And he just kind of rolled his eyes. Well, you know, I guess, you know, you have to put into some perspective, and I understand the point he was making. But yeah, so Wednesday, absolutely crazy. I had just finished up my scripts for the morning newscasts, and as soon as I finished them, the word came down that the encampment at UW-Madison, that there was a situation there. It was all hands on deck. Frankly, we had the hosts of our Madison morning show and their producer went over to campus with their cameras. I stayed. I was able to call information I was able to get, write it up, record it, get it on the air as soon as I can. That was very important. The third district congressional forum, that was planned ahead of time, so we knew. But that was logistics. I had to drive 3 hours away to go get to that. And we knew about Donald Trump, of course. We knew he was going to Waukesha. Still a massive undertaking.
Well, of course, the guy comes on 30 minutes early and throws a wrench in the machine. We got to leave it there. Thanks so much, Terry. My thanks and respect to you and Stuart and everybody on the news team at Civic. You help us all get the information to the folks that they need to know. Thanks for being here. Terry will be back every first Friday of the month to do media on the media. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be back with more in a moment.
The only dream that I've been chasing is my own. So I sing a song for the hustlers trading at the bus stop. Single mothers waiting on a check to come.
Welcome back, Wisconsin. Some of the folks that I know that hustle the hardest are newsmen and women and journalists. My thanks again to Terry Bell for joining me for the monthly Media on the Media segment. My thanks to Stuart J. Waddles, who helps cover Southeastern Wisconsin for Civic Media and helps us bring to you what you need to know. So, I spent some time with the PolitiFact fact check after Donald Trump's visit here in Wisconsin, because he talked for a long time. I mean, a long time. And again, I sometimes find it a little bit hard to follow what the guy's talking about. Some of the what he's referring to isn't always as clear as you would hope. But there were a couple of what I would call his classics, like some of the Trump, he says this stuff a lot. And so I thought it would be worth it before we bring on the lieutenant governor, who's going to join us at the bottom of the hour. Before we bring on the lieutenant governor, wanted to share some of the fact checks. So this is a frequent flyer for the former president. He said this on Wednesday, quote, "The people that benefited the most from my tax cuts are lower income people, and Biden wants them to expire." That is a lie. That gets Liar Liar Pants on Fire. This is according to the Urban Institute, Brookings Institution, Tax Policy Center, as well as other tax think tanks. This is according to John Buell, the Tax Policy Center Communications Director. Their analysis found that the Trump tax cuts, on average, did cut taxes for basically every single income level. But taxpayers in the highest income levels received by far the largest tax reduction, the largest tax benefits. So, for example, people earning up to $25,000 saw, on average, their federal tax rate drop by 0.4 percentage points. Okay? But the top one-fifth of taxpayers saw their federal income tax drop on average by 1.8%. And that's a pretty sizable difference when you apply it to your overall income. And by far, the Trump tax cuts, the biggest gains would go to households in the top 1 to 5% of income levels. These are people earning from $307,000 to $732,000 a year. By any stretch, very well-to-do folks. Okay, their tax rate's going down by 3.1 percentage points. So, yep, the tax cuts helped out the lowest income earners, but the greatest benefits went to those with the greatest incomes. Again, I think maybe that's a little inverted. Maybe it should be the other way around. A 3.1% tax cut for the for people making $25,000 or less, and maybe just a 0.4% tax drop for the people making $750,000. I mean, come on. Shouldn't be that hard. And as to the portion of that that says, well, Biden wants to take those away, that's a lie, because the implication is that Biden wants to stop the tax break that did go to folks that aren't making nearly $1 million every year. That's a lie. Biden has said again and again and again he will let the tax cuts expire only for people making $400,000 or more. That ain't me. I'm good. So that's, I think this is, again, one of those common refrains that my tax cuts benefited lower income people the most. That is a lie. Trump's assertion that Biden wants to do away with the tax cuts for the lower income people, that is a lie. And it's high time we all, you know, again, facts I used to think mattered a lot in politics. So I think, again, this is incredibly important. We got to get this right. He also made a claim that this was the largest tax cut in history, larger than the Reagan tax cuts. Nope. Totally false. The Trump tax cut was the fourth largest tax cut since 1940. As a percent, and as a percentage of GDP, it was the seventh largest since 1940. So again, a lie. Here was the other thing that Trump said that I thought, well, I know as an economist, that's not right. What is he talking about? He said this, quote, GDP growth was plunging by more than 50% in the first quarter of this year. Makes you sound like, oh my God, the sky is falling. Sock your gold bullion and dollars under your mattress. No. Here are the facts. In 2023's fourth quarter, so we're just now in the second quarter of 2024. So 2023's fourth quarter, GDP rose by 3.4% on an annualized basis. In 2024, so this year's first quarter, it rose by 1.6%. So yes, that's less, nearly 50% less, but it's not an economic calamity. It's just slower growth, which, by the way, may help on the inflation end. That's one of the things that indeed the Fed is looking at. You know, in order to stop inflation from creeping up, oftentimes you need to try to cool the economy off. So again, what Trump's saying is really, really misleading. And here I want to share this as well. This past quarter, okay, as compared to the last quarter of 2023, that last quarter of 2023 was the fastest growing quarter since January of 22. So it was a really hot economy in the last quarter of the year. That is often very typical because guess what? There's a ton of consumer spending because it's the holidays. People are traveling. People are buying gifts. People are buying lots of food, right? That's so you generally, all else being equal, you see a lot more or more accelerated GDP growth in the last quarter of any year, all else being equal. And you tend to see less growth in the first quarter. That is, ask anybody that invests or knows anything about economics, they will tell you that that is the pattern over and over again. Those two things together, right? If you look at those lies, if you will, that is feeding the narrative of these economic scare tactics that the MAGA president, the former MAGA president, has employed. And when you couple that with how income has become and wealth has become so much less equal, less egalitarian, that so much more of our country's wealth is going to the richest 1% to 5% of people as a result of Reagan era through today Republican policies. Yeah, the pain that we're feeling is real, but let me be clear. It is Joe Biden that is helping put more dollars in your pocket, having less of it go out in taxes, and trying to fight the greedflation, the price gouging, and the ridiculous pricing of prescription drugs. That wasn't Donald Trump. Don't let him fool you. So excited. We've got Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez coming up next. We'll talk briefly about the former MAGA president's visit, but also Joe Biden's vision for his next term in office. Don't go anywhere. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back, Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Really excited to have with me a very special guest, Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez. Welcome, Madam Lieutenant Governor. Thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, you had a press conference on Wednesday in advance of the former MAGA president's remarks in Waukesha. And in advance of that, the Biden-Harris campaign put out some of Donald Trump's last statements relating to the freedom that women should have to control their own bodies, or Donald Trump's statements that are the opposite of that. Is it okay with you, Madam Lieutenant Governor, if I play you a little bit of what Donald Trump had to say and let you respond?
Sure.
All right, let's roll them. Anya, are you ready? Let's take a couple of those one-liners from Donald Trump. This is the former MAGA president responding to the Dobbs decision. Let's take a listen.
The court is probably maybe going to change also. See, it's all of what it's the will of the people. This is what I've been saying. It's a perfect system. So for 52 years, people have wanted to end Roe v. Wade to get it back to the states. We did that. It was an incredible thing, an incredible achievement. We did that, and now the states have it, and the states are putting out what they want. It's the will of the people. So Florida's probably going to change. Arizona's going to definitely change. Everybody wants that to happen. And you're getting the will of the people. It's been pretty amazing, when you think.
Pretty amazing. Pretty amazing is what he calls it. What do you have to say, Madam Lieutenant Governor?
Well, it's clear he's proud of what he's done. He is absolutely taking ownership of overturning Roe versus Wade from the Dobbs decision. And he needs to own every single one of these stories that we are hearing all across the U.S., putting women's lives in danger, prosecuting, potentially prosecuting physicians for just doing their job. He's proud of this. He owns this. And we need to make sure everybody in Wisconsin knows this as well as across the U.S.
I couldn't agree with you more. What's concerning to me is that it seems that the president, as well as others that align themselves with the former MAGA president, are trying to now distance themselves from these very clear statements that they've made over and over and over again. How do you suggest, Madam Lieutenant Governor, how should voters process that? How should they understand what the position of the former MAGA president and his allies is?
Well, I mean, we know that Trump lies over and over and over again. That's been clear since the very beginning. But we have to remember what he has done. And every time he has had the opportunity to rip away rights from women, to ban abortion, he has done that. So if legislation comes across his desk, we know that he will sign a national abortion ban. And that will affect everyone, everyone in Wisconsin, everyone in California. It will not matter. That is what's going to be the law of the United States if we put Donald Trump back in the presidency.
And you began your career in healthcare as a registered nurse. You came into politics in part because you saw what was happening in response to COVID. How has your experience as a nurse, especially working in Mercy Hospital in Baltimore, how does that inform your role in government?
So I have always looked at health policy and a way that I can do what I do as a nurse on a bigger scale. And that's really what this looks like. And if we talk about abortion, if we talk about reproductive health care, I know what that looks like. I was practicing nursing before we had the Affordable Care Act. You know, I was out as a Peace Corps volunteer doing reproductive health education. I know how dangerous it is when women do not have access to the full range of reproductive health care services. And that does include abortion care. People's lives and health is on the line. And we have to make sure that we remember that this November.
Absolutely. I wanted to ask you also about the incredibly tight race that you ran and won back in 2020. Unseating a Republican incumbent. You won that seat for the 13th Assembly District by just 735 votes. What's the strategy? First of all, congratulations. That was awesome. I was cheering for you all the way. What lessons do you take from that about how to help President Joe Biden and Vice President Harris win Wisconsin come this November?
Well, here's the thing. I live in Waukesha County. And Waukesha County has always been a place where the Republican Party thought that they would always control. And I am seeing people changing their votes all across Waukesha County because they do not want the extremism. They do not agree with what the MAGA Trump party is. It's no longer the Republican Party. It is the party of Trump. And we are just common sense people in Waukesha County. And we're not going to tolerate that type of extremism, that type of chaos. So those are the kind of messages that we want to make sure that we're getting out there. We do not want to return to the chaos of a Trump administration. We have to read his Time magazine interview where he is talking about punishing women for having abortions, where he is talking about rounding up immigrants to put in camps for deportation. These are extremist views, and they do not match the values of Wisconsinites.
Thank you for queuing that up. I'm going to be covering the Time magazine article as well as the fact check of that article in detail on my show on Monday. So if you're listening, don't miss that. We'll dig into everything that the former MAGA president had to say in that interview. It eerily echoes, in my view, Madam Lieutenant Governor, the Heritage Foundation's Project 2025, which I euphemistically refer to as the one-term plan to turn a democracy into autocracy, you know, in 839 pages of some easy steps. But that's basically what the former MAGA president got out and came into the Time interview and just said out loud. I was wondering, what do you think? Do you think folks in Waukesha County, in Ozaukee County, are hearing this? Because at least by the measure of the 2022 election that you and Governor Evers won, it certainly seems like the needle is starting to move back to common sense.
I agree. I agree. I do think people in Waukesha know that democracy is on the line. Trump has said he wants to be a dictator on day one. Let's believe him. That's what he said. He wants to be a dictator on day one. Do you think he's going to give up that power after that day one? He is not. So we need to know democracy is on the line. We have to vote for President Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris this November. This is really the only option we have to make sure we can restore our reproductive rights and make sure that we can restore voting rights and democracy all across the state.
Now, you are a native of Waukesha County. You live in Brookfield now. What do you say to your neighbors, neighbors and friends? And I don't mean now. Of course, you reside in Madison and have to do the super commute, which I call it. Boy, wouldn't it be nice if we had some high speed rail between southeastern Wisconsin, right? What do you say to your neighbors, family and friends here in not just Waukesha County, but the WOW counties in general, about what November means for Wisconsin?
So I actually live in Waukesha still. I'm still raising my family there. I'm actually live in the city of Waukesha.
You do.
But
okay.
What I do. What I talk to them about is that there is so much more that unites us than divides us.
Yes.
Because I live in Waukesha County, I have friends. I have neighbors, I have family members who have voted for Republicans in the past. And we have always been able to sit down and have a conversation about policy that is respectful and appropriate. And these are the kind of conversations we are gonna need to be able to have in these counties. Because even if you don't know what their political views are at this point, having that respectful conversation, talking about what's on the line, talking about what Biden has done for the economy, these are the kind of messages that are going to get out. The strongest messengers we have are friends and family. So start having those conversations. Don't be afraid to reach out to that neighbor, to that friend, and talk to them about the stakes of this election.
That's so important, Lieutenant Governor. And I think one of the aims, at least what I try to do and what I think my colleagues here at Civic Media try to do, is think of these things in terms of the values that we share here in Wisconsin. When we're talking about those sorts of things, what kind of values jump to top of mind for you, Madam Lieutenant Governor?
So I always say this, I say this a lot about Wisconsin, is that we take care of each other.
Yes.
We do. We take care of each other. And that is a very core value of Wisconsinites. And who is Trump wanting to take care of? He wants to take care of himself. He wants to take care of his rich friends. And President Biden has done so much to invest in our economy. We have had some of the lowest unemployment rates we've ever had in the state of Wisconsin. That is because of those economic policies. You know, we have folks that are making more money than they ever have before. President Biden is investing in the economy from the bottom up and the middle out, and he's going to continue to do that for the next 4 years.
I think it's interesting that you began your comments by of course, framing this as Donald Trump isn't working in anybody's best interest except his own. That is a frequent refrain on this show. I say, you want to know what his policy platform is? Ask yourself what is going to get him more power or money on that day, and I'll tell you what his policy position is, because that's really what it is, which is antithetical to being a public servant, whether you're elected or working in the civil service. I wanted to ask you briefly about the recently announced retirement of Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice Ann Walsh Bradley. This is a really big deal, is it not? Were you surprised by her announcement?
Not necessarily surprised. She has served so well, and I just want to thank her for her service because she has served Wisconsin well during her time on the court. And we were going to have really good candidates who are going to continue this legacy of upholding our rights here in Wisconsin.
Couldn't agree with you more. My thanks as well. I'll join the Lieutenant Governor in saying thank you for your public service to Justice Ann Walsh Bradley. Watch this space, Wisconsin, because that's going to be an incredibly important election. We just have a couple minutes left, Madam Lieutenant Governor. What would you like to say to the state of Wisconsin? How should people engage? What is your message to not just Waukesha County, but the state?
So for me, I want to tell people to keep engaged, keep listening, keep talking to your neighbors and your friends about the importance of this election. I know we are a swing state, and I know it can be frustrating to be that swing state and constantly having the attention placed on Wisconsin. But we do know that the presidency runs through our state. What happens in Wisconsin has national implications. So keep up the hard work, keep talking to your neighbors, and go out and vote this November and take several friends with you.
You heard it here. The Lieutenant Governor of the state of Wisconsin, you got to go vote. That's how you make your voice matter. And Wisconsin, it is a must win on the road to the White House this November. Thanks so much, Madam Lieutenant Governor. Great to talk to you. Hope we can have you back sometime soon.
Thank you very much.
You have a great weekend. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Don't go anywhere. You're going to have some closing thoughts for the week and a little story about one of my absolute favorite set of books and a cool TV show. I'll tell you what it is when we come back. Don't go anywhere. Last thoughts for the week. If you want to call and share your last thoughts on this incredibly busy week of news, you can do so. 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. And of course, hats off and thanks to Wisconsin Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez. What's wrong with being confident? What's wrong with being? What's wrong with being? What's wrong with being confident? It's time to get the chains out. What's wrong with being? What's wrong with being? What's wrong with being confident? I break chains all by myself. Won't let my freedom ride in hell. Hey, I'ma keep on running because the winner don't quit on themselves. Welcome back, Wisconsin, and happy Friday. You wondered what to do this weekend? Brewers Cubs. Here on the Civic Media Radio Network tomorrow at 1:20 is first pitch. On a number of our stations across the Civic Media Radio Network, go get the app. It is free and check it out. It's supposed to be a beautiful day. Also want to give a shout out to my wonderful producer, Anya Esther. She and I'm very grateful to have been nominated for a couple of awards at the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association. Anya and I will be kicking it in Madtown tomorrow for the awards. But thanks, Anya, for everything you do.
Well, thank you, Maggie. I look forward to bringing home some hardware tomorrow, and we are going to kick some butt and take some names.
I hope so. She keeps me honest and on the straight and narrow because, you know, some days that is a wee bit of a challenge. Ho-ho! Speaking of kicking butt and taking names, one of my favorite series of books are the Reacher series of books, which were made into a TV show recently. Just Tom Cruise is an odd bird, to say the very least. And a number of years ago, like a decade ago, they made a Jack Reacher movie with Tom Cruise. Well, Tom Cruise is like a midget, a small person, right? He's really short. If I stood next to him, I'd look like Godzilla, for real. He's just a tiny little petite dude. And Jack Reacher in the books is 6'5", and he's like a chiseled, enormous, huge athlete specimen of a man. That ain't Tom Cruise. So when they made the movie a long time ago, the fans of the series were ticked off because, like, knew it's not Tom Cruise. A lot of the just atmospherics in the book are that this guy is enormous. He's a highly skilled, trained, hand-to-hand combat guy, the storyline, he was in the military police, et cetera, et cetera. And the Reacher character is kind of a lone wolf type. He has a fundamental philosophy, and it's he doesn't like to see people get picked on, is basically it. He doesn't like to see bad people get away with stuff. And I read stuff like this because I've always been the legal thriller, the spy thriller, the military thriller, the political thriller. That's my fun reading stuff. Because during the day, I read lots of dense things. So I like, this is my equivalent of like the Real Housewives series, is I read spy novels and legal thrillers. And I have for a long time. So when they finally decided to make a Reacher TV series, and they actually hired an actor that looked like the character in the book, I was thrilled. The actor's name is a guy by the name of Alan Richson. He's a big, big dude. In any case, a bit of controversy as of late. This actor shares his political opinions a bunch online. And one of the things about a lot of these, what I'm going to call sort of military, righteous, protagonist books, is that they are quite popular amongst conservatives. Very. And the Reacher series, maybe amongst like the top three for conservatives. And so the show, Reacher, also has a conservative-leaning fan base. I'm sort of the exception to the rule. It tends to be men, tends to be white dudes, and they tend to be conservative. So Alan Richson has been out there on the socials posting about his political opinions and used some pretty specific language about the former MAGA president, called him a rapist and a con man on the socials. And he just got lit up, right? These comments were made not on the socials, but he actually made those particular comments in an interview with The Hollywood Reporter, but he said similar things on the socials. And he also was photographed wearing a T-shirt that said, "Arrest the cops who killed Breonna Taylor." Okay, so the guy, the guy has some political opinions. And he said this, "Cops get away with murder all the time." This is Alan Richson. "And the fact that we can't really hold them accountable for their improprieties is disturbing to me," he said in the interview with The Hollywood Reporter. "We should completely reform the way that we police. I mean, you shouldn't have to spend more time getting an education as a hairstylist than a cop who's armed with a deadly weapon." He said it. I've been always an advocate for constant retraining and re-education and psychological screening, because I know that being a police officer over the course of your career is traumatizing, and sometimes many people in those kinds of careers can become almost desensitized to things, and that's not super healthy. That's not good for cops. It's not good for the community. So the National Fraternal Order of Police caught wind of Richson's comments and posted a photo of the actor on its Instagram page, calling him a useless Hollywood actor who's virtue signaling for attention at the expense of brave police officer. And then they kind of started in a back and forth. Richson responded, calling it a concerning display of emotional immaturity. Quote, "This kind of emotionally immature response is the epitome of what concerns me about law enforcement today. If this is how leadership handles a peaceful disagreement, what does life look like for those unseen interactions in the street? How does this shape the character of those police officers looking to management? Do you really want individuals so easily angered and bullying like school children to have a gun and the protection of all of an untouchable union?" I think this is interesting. I think next week, I'm going to spend some time talking about this, because people seem to have varying viewpoints on whether or not actors or athletes or whomever it may be should be weighing in on political discourse or even having political opinions. I mean, infamously, I think it was Ann Coulter that said, "Shut up and dribble," in response to, I believe at the time, LeBron James making some political comments. So we're going to revisit that. I think let's make that a topic. Maybe. So, and I misspoke before. I said Monday we're doing the Time Magazine article. We are not. Anya and I are together doing a very special show on Monday for Holocaust Remembrance Day. So on Tuesday next week, I will be doing the Time Magazine article. And on Thursday next week, let's talk about actors and athletes getting into the political discourse. Maybe we'll call it the Taylor Swift Effect episode. I'm Maggie Dawn. You've been listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. My thanks to Terry Bell, Terry Barr, and of course, Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez. Have a great weekend, everybody. I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But always remember, it is better when we stand together.